Next, we're going to turn, as I said, to our very distinguished panelist. And we have Emiliano Duque is the founder and president of the Cluster Competitiveness Group, a consulting firm that designs and implements cluster-based regional competitiveness policies. Emiliano studied under Michael Porter at Harvard and has been influenced by him and taken that thinking further. He currently advises regional and national governments of Europe and Latin America on competitiveness strategies. Olaf Kula is the program manager for ACI Avoca's West Africa regional office. He provides technical assistance and intellectual leadership to ACI's programs. But I think his big role here is that on the panel is that he has been working a lot with the local private sector and had some experience himself as a local West African business person. Rob Schneider, I think many of us know from his GDA days. He's been with USAID since 2005, and GDA, the Office of Global Development Alliances, is now subsumed under the new IDEA Bureau, which is the Bureau of Innovation Development Alliances and Development Alliances. And here he supports public-private partnerships. So what we want to do is we want to give our panelists a few minutes to respond both to Margaret and also to talk about their perception of public-private partnership, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And let's let Emiliano go first.
So thank you. It's very weird. That's the first time we repeat the same panel twice, so I hope anybody was here yesterday?
No.
Hopefully not. No. So, but well, we'll repeat more or less what we said yesterday, but I think we'd rather focus on more questions because now we know everybody, the dynamics, no? But basically, my role has been the one, because I'm trying to summarize already what happened yesterday. I think repeating it already, maybe it's a big faking it, no? I was telling them that when I was a little kid, 9 years old, so that's almost 45 years ago, I was in a television contest, one of these questions that, and the television was very primitive in Spain, you remember, you know. So most of the times they will tape the thing and they'll say the sound didn't come up, so we need to repeat it. So we repeated the questions where we're supposed not to know, and every one of us fake the thing that I know, and we got the question. So this reminds me like this, you know, repeat again, knowing what everybody's going to say, you know.
We're going to say it differently this time.
Yeah, but basically, my argument has been all the time that bringing the private sector, you know, with an American mentality, it cannot be bad, you know. Of course, it has to be good. So my thing is, be careful. There are things here that the private sector, especially the companies we're going to bring, they're not the small companies. They're all the names here that are, you know, very big corporations. You know, when we bring them into this equation, which in many of the other sessions you have seen, that is very delicate. There are lots of factors, socioeconomic factors, trust. You know, yesterday I was trying to say this is more almost like an ecosystem, which in every community where we go, it's there already. You know, we're not building it, you know. And we're trying to improve it, but we're trying to improve it. Sometimes we're bringing, you know, these big monsters, this artillery, you know, to fight problems. And you know, the side effects or, you know, the collateral damage of this, it could be worse than the help. That was my concern, and that's what I was trying to express, that in many cases, these companies could bring the good things I've been mentioned, you know, the technology, the innovation, the capabilities, the management skills. But the first thing that needs to be decided by the community where they come, if that's what we need, if that's the company that we need, you know, if that's the product that we need to be producing, if that's the thing that fits with our own strategy. And I think Margaret pointed out that that's part of the exercise that you are trying to do previously for them, which I think is very important. And yesterday, what I was just saying about that, the level of refinement of granularity of that decision, it's very, very local. You know, within, it's not only, you know, you need to focus on this kind of food or you need to focus on that. It can be up to, you know, what level of crop and in what level of market something need to be addressed or not. No? We're working in Mexico with corn producers. And their productivity is so low that they cannot compete with anything. You know, I mean, the corn that give to the pigs there comes from Oklahoma or from the United States because it's cheaper to do that. But then what do? We improve the productivity for them so they compete with the Americans to be feeder for the pigs? Or no, for them what they need is to focus on a few chipotles in there, and they have an agreement with several tortillerias in Mexico City in which they make a very special corn for them because they produce so small amounts that they could become niche players. But that's a decision that has to be taken at a very local level. For them, what they need is not a productivity increase, and they don't need to buy their things from Monsanto, on the contrary, you know. So my point is that these decisions need to be done by the local committee, definitely with your assistance. That's what you can help them to make this decision, and then decide in the second step, do you bring here, you know, General Mills or not? You know, is that the expertise that we need or not? So that is my main argument. And I think I will leave it here in order to continue with the rest. Okay.
Thank you very much, Emiliana. Olaf, let's hear what you have to say about the importance of the local private sector in these engagement deals.
Thank you, Jean. When we first discussed this over the phone a couple months ago, I thought that there was a certain hubris in talking in us as development partners talking about engaging the private sector. It's a little bit like the flea steering the dog. They may have aspirations as to where the dog is going to go, but you know, there are issues of sort of scale and investment. In most of the economies where we work, if you can easily have 10,000 firms and farms in a sector investing on average $5,000 each. That's $50 million. You know, there are very few programs that we manage that are $50 million programs in these countries. And what we're trying to do is find where we have joint objective functions with the private sector. And indeed, looking at ways in which we might be able to buy down private sector risk so that investment can be accelerated, so that our objective functions can be met more quickly. But we are the flea. And the dog is the private sector, and that's why we're working with them. We're working with this local private sector because they can mobilize so much more. They do mobilize so much more capital than the private sector and governments do, et cetera. I love Emiliano's notion of these decisions need to be made locally, but I don't agree with it necessarily because knowledge is often not accessible to some of these local communities. There are so many examples now worldwide where you have small-scale communities with small local firms that are producing products for regional markets and global markets, but the information about that market opportunity was not identified locally. So this is, again, another, where we can be a productive and useful flea on the dog is helping to facilitate some of those discussions. And you mentioned yesterday the importance of bringing local producers from Bolivia to the UK to make some of those linkages. To not be overly romantic, I think there are clearly advantages. And my guess a case in point I'm making is that it's not talking about the PepsiCos who are important or the Coca-Colas who are important and with whom we are grateful to work with, but really the small and medium firms. One is that value chains really are webs, and that there is a rich cluster of services on which growth and investment depends. Financial services, information services, extension services, equipment and input services. Most of even the large companies like PepsiCo and Coca-Cola, if they're serious about investing, they don't want to carry the cost of all of these services on their balance sheet. So they are looking for partnerships with small and medium firms who can begin to provide those services on a sustainable basis to their clients so that Coca-Cola's investment costs or PepsiCo's investment costs or Walmart's investment costs in linking backward to these small-scale farmers or other producers is much lower. There are, I think, some key problems that we should be – I think another advantage for us is that the other for me, listening to the local private sector is critical, because in the development world, we deal with sort of moral constructs. We talk about what should happen. We talk about how much better the world would be if this group did this and this group did that. The private sector doesn't work with shoulds. That's not a. There's, if there were a lexicon for private sector English, it wouldn't include the word should. They pursue opportunities, and they pursue them when they perceive the risks to be acceptable, when they're not afraid of those risks. So the private sector, especially the local private sector, often is a very important litmus test for development practitioners. If the private sector is not at all operating in a particular space, we should understand pretty carefully why that's not happening before we say, oh, well, we're going to go into this place and we're going to make all kinds of investment happen. Because you can be sure the private sector has thought about it for a long time and made a decision that this is not a good place to make that investment. But I think there are there remain many weaknesses in this local and regional private sector in at least many of the countries where I've worked. And one is management capacity. It tends to be very low. In many countries, I see private sector firms, largely family operations, that have invested millions of dollars in plant and equipment, and they have no supply for it. Or firms that are seeking capital, and in both cases, the major problem that they're facing is they don't have the management expertise that they need. So I think when we talk about engaging the private sector, we need to do it both as humbly as the flea on the dog, but we also need to recognize that the dog needs some guidance and technical assistance in this case. We observe a lot of gender implications in how firms participate and play, but again, I think this just is an imperative for us to look more carefully. I think the other thing that I mentioned the importance of looking at the physical and policy environment or why investment isn't happening. So I think we also need to look at innovation. Often local firms have less access to information about the opportunities without a facilitation activity going on with a development partner or other. And so sometimes while local and regional firms can play very key roles, they have a better sense of the risks involved with a particular activity. There is a role for either development partners or bringing in larger private firms who have a better sense of where some of these large opportunities are. So I think I'll stop at that point.
Thank you, Olaf. Now we're going to hear from Rob and hear another USAID perspective and that of the GDA Now idea person.
So again, I'm in the Global Partnerships Division of the Innovation and Development Alliance's office. I try and say that a lot because not too many people have heard of it, so we need to get the new acronyms out there so that, you know, in 5 years we can have more new acronyms. But at least for now, the idea is our acronym. So for those that know the Global Development Alliance, we are basically the same old Global Development Alliance office, but in new clothing. So I'm going to talk a little bit not from the local private sector, but more sort of from the global perspective, because that tends to be where we focus in Washington. And I think my comments are addressed both to my USAID colleagues as well as to implementers that are out there primarily. And I think many of us agree on kind of the ends where we want to get in the public-private partnership space, but disagree a bit on the means and how to get there. And so I think one of the things we've done within USAID over the last 10 years, I think sometimes we've expected the private sector to be a bit of a panacea, that, you know, we come up with a fabulous program, and then we say, you know, and then there's some section in our RFP that says, and engage the private sector through partnership. And I think my point would be that you need to spend as much time developing that partnership as you do developing the RFP or the development program, because just engaging the private sector sort of as an afterthought is not going to gain you the types of impact from a development perspective that you really want. And not engaging the private sector early and often may lead you down many of the paths that Emiliano and Olaf will probably talk about and some of the examples that we'll discuss during the question and answer period. It's not the private sector's job to focus on development. That's our job. And so we can't expect them to be thinking about that, even though many of these organizations have a reason for appreciating the development activities that we do and have a reason for supporting them. They're only going to do that analysis to a certain degree, and that's our job really to make sure that the beneficiaries that we're hoping to benefit from the activities actually do. And I think now maybe I'll switch a little and address maybe some of the common, myths or misconceptions and defense of why work with the private sector? What is it that makes sense for us to do? And I think if a lot of times we hear, well, it's really difficult. It takes time and money and effort, and it's a distraction from some of the other things. And I think you can't get it done. It's going to take 18 months, and we're never going to get where we want to get. And I think what we have found in our experience looking at hundreds of these partnerships over the years has been that if you get the analysis right, if you look at the overlap between our development interest and their private sector interest, and everyone's honest about why are we here, what's the motivation, we find that the private sector is more than willing to put up resources, both cash and in-kind resources, in order to accomplish some of the goals. They may want to accomplish the same thing for very different reasons than we do, but as long as we can agree on a certain set of parameters, I think we can have that successful partnership. And where we don't have that overlap, we tend to see one or more parties walk away from the deal, and it's not particularly successful. Another thing that oftentimes in discussions with implementing partners, we get a little bit, sometimes there's this USAID implementing partner headbutt. And I think what we recognize is that both sides actually have a lot to gain from this. Many times implementing partners can go out and negotiate partnerships, USAID can negotiate partnerships, but both sides are very important to actually implementing these partners. USAID has a breadth and knowledge and ability to bring partnerships with companies from region to region, from sector to sector. We can work with Coke all over the world, whereas implementing partners often can't. But on the other hand, the implementing partners really have oftentimes that local presence and the ability to get out and see what's going on in the local private sector and engage those local stakeholders, whereas some of the USAID folks might not have that ability just due to sort of the bureaucracy of USAID and all the other requirements that are part of our daily job. So I think that marriage is also one that's very important, as well as partnership with our other donor, if we're partnering with other donor organizations. And so navigating sort of the development partners is also as important as navigating that public-private partnership as well. And then finally, one of the main criticisms that we tend to get is that, well, USAID should be working with the poorest of the poor, and don't be working with these private sector companies. That's not our core business. And I think one of the things we've recognized is that many of the countries where we operate have these very fragile middle classes or lower middle classes that, if we can work with companies to create sustainable activities for those in that income strata, we can take our very scarce development resources and then reallocate them to some of the folks over the course of time that are going to continuously need that, the lower quintile or the lower two quintiles of folks that are going to continue to need the kinds of subsidies that USAID can help provide through our projects. But without that solid middle class, we're never going to be able to sort of slowly address a lot of those issues.